All right, so get this. We're diving deep today into a copyright case, and it's got the photography world buzzing, let me tell you. It all starts with a photographer, you might know him, Jonathan Mannion, and a Coors Light billboard. That looks awfully familiar.
Oh, yeah.
You ready to unpack this?
Absolutely. This case is fascinating. It really highlights how copyright law, you know, grapples with visual art, specifically photography.
Okay, so Mannion. He's known for his iconic shots, right? Athletes, musicians, big names. And he's claiming that Coors straight up ripped off his famous photo of Kevin Garnett for their beer ad.
Yeah, that's right. And when you put the two images side by side, I mean, the similarities are pretty undeniable. It's the pose, the clothes, the jewelry, even that same cloudy backdrop. Mm. Coors pretty much nailed it, except it's not Kevin Garnett in their photo.
Yeah, so where does copyright law even come into play here? Can you really own the rights to, like, a pose or a certain style of clothing?
Yeah, right. That's where things get interesting. You see, copyright law, it protects original works. And in photography, you know, originality, it can come from three key areas.
Oh, okay. This is where it gets juicy. Lay it on me.
All right. So the first one is rendition. Basically, the photographer's unique style and technique. Think about it this way. 10 photographers can take a picture of the same landmark, right? But each photo is going to look different, based on the angle, the lighting, the composition, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. So even though they're photographing the same thing, each photographer is bringing their own creative flair to the table.
Exactly. And courts have actually upheld this idea. There was this case a while back where a photographer's style of shooting picture frames was protected, not the frames themselves, just the style.
Wow. Okay, so it's not about what you photograph, but how you photograph it. What's the second area?
So the second area is timing. Being in the right place at the right time to capture a truly unique moment. Think about iconic photographs like that incredible shot of the sailor kissing a nurse in Times Square on VJ Day. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, a perfectly timed photo of a salmon seemingly leaping into a bear's mouth.
Those are some amazing examples.
Yeah.
So just being lucky enough to capture that one-of-a-kind moment.
Yeah.
That can give you copyright protection.
It can, because you're the only one who captured that specific moment in time.
Wow.
And then the third area is the creation of the subject. So if a photographer arranges the scene, like posing models or setting up a specific backdrop, they have a much stronger claim to copyright because they're essentially creating the whole scene from scratch.
Oh, so like those photo shoots,
yes,
you know, where they have models posing with puppies and baskets and stuff like that.
Yeah,
exactly. There's actually a famous case. It involves a photograph titled Puppies. And it illustrates this point perfectly. The photographer carefully arranged a couple with 8 adorable puppies on their laps. And someone tried to recreate that exact scene, but in a sculpture. And the court sided with the photographer. They recognized the originality in the photographer's specific arrangement.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm starting to see how this all connects back to the Mannion case. So let's break it down. What makes Mannion's photo of Kevin Garnett original? Is he claiming all three of these areas?
He is, and it's a really interesting argument. If we analyze the photo, you can see Mannion made some deliberate choices. He shot Garnett from a low angle, giving him this powerful, larger-than-life presence. The lighting emphasizes Garnett's right side, and it creates subtle shadows. And Mannion has even said that he directed Garnett's pose and asked him to wear simple clothing and lots of jewelry.
So he's arguing that it's not just a photo of Kevin Garnett, but like a carefully crafted image with his artistic vision behind it.
Exactly. He's claiming originality in the rendition, the timing, capturing Garnett at this particular moment in his career, and the creation of the subject through his direction.
Clever. But Coors is firing back, right?
Yeah.
What's their defense?
Their main argument is that the similarities are just about the idea of a young black man wearing jewelry, and ideas, they argue, aren't protected by copyright.
Hmm. Interesting. Is that a valid point, though? Can you really claim ownership over, like, a general concept like that?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it takes us into one of the trickiest areas of copyright law, the idea-expression distinction. It's a concept that, you know, works relatively well with things like books or music. But when you're dealing with visual art like photography, it gets a lot murkier. I mean, where do you even draw the line between an idea and its expression, you know, especially in a photograph?
Yeah, I can see how that would be tricky. So is Coors basically saying that Mannion is trying to copyright the very idea of a young black man with jewelry?
That's essentially their argument. Yeah. They're saying that, you know, the similarities, they boil down to unprotectable elements.
Okay, but couldn't you depict that same idea in a million ways? I mean, think about it. You could have.
Right.
A studio shot, you know, a street scene.
Yeah.
A totally different pose, different lighting.
Exactly. And that's where Kaur's argument starts to, I think, fall apart a little bit. The similarities between Mannion's photo and the Kaur's billboard, they go way beyond just a basic concept. The
Yeah.
composition, the angle, the lighting, that cloudy backdrop, all of those choices, they create a very specific aesthetic. And Mannion is arguing that it's his aesthetic, his expression of that idea that's being infringed upon.
Okay, I'm starting to understand the nuance here. But this whole idea expression thing, it seems like it's been a headache for the courts for a while now, right?
Oh, it definitely has. Even legal scholars, they have a tough time defining where the line is. There's actually this famous quote by Judge Learned Hand. He was a prominent figure in copyright law. And he once said, "Nobody has ever been able to fix that boundary, and nobody ever can. It's a constant struggle."
Wow. So are we almost using the wrong tool to analyze these cases then? Is the idea expression framework just not a good fit for photography?
That's a question that's being raised more and more these days. You know what often happens is that courts will kind of twist the word idea to basically mean a very general description of what's in the photo, which doesn't really help when you're trying to assess the unique elements of a visual artwork.
Yeah, I see what you mean, though. It's like trying to describe the taste of a complex dish by just listing the ingredients. You're missing all the subtleties.
Exactly. And that brings us back to the Mannion case. The judge actually acknowledges this problem. He's pointed out that, the idea expression distinction, it simply doesn't work well for photography. Instead, he suggests that focusing on the originality of the rendition and the creation of the subject offers a much clearer approach.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. That seems like a much more practical way to kind of evaluate these cases.
It does, and it raises an important question. Are we on the verge of moving away from this idea expression framework in photography copyright cases?
Wow, that would be huge. So let's say the jury sides with Mannion in this case. What kind of impact could that have on future copyright battles? Would it open the floodgates for all kinds of lawsuits?
It's certainly possible. It could set a very powerful precedent, strengthening the rights of photographers to protect their creative choices, even when those choices involve elements that might not be copyrightable on their own. Think about it. If photographers can claim copyright over a basic pose or concept, it could have massive implications for areas like commercial photography, advertising, even social media.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't even considered those implications. But let's be real. There are also some key differences between the two photos, right?
There are. The Kaur's billboard photo is in black and white. While Mannion's original is in color, the model isn't Kevin Garnett, and the image is flipped, showing the model's left side instead of the right. There are also, slight variations in the jewelry and clothing. The question is, do those differences outweigh the striking similarities? And that's ultimately what a jury will have to grapple with.
So it sounds like there's no easy answer here. It's a complex case with a lot of gray areas.
Absolutely. And it really highlights the challenges of applying copyright law to a medium as nuanced and visually driven as photography.
This whole deep dive, has really got me thinking about all the photos I take. I never really considered the copyright implications before. It's like a whole new layer of awareness for me.
It is, and it really makes you appreciate the artistry and intentionality that goes into creating, a truly original photograph. It's not just point and shoot. It's about capturing a vision.
Yeah, totally. And it makes you wonder, with all the digital editing tools we have these days, does that make copyright even more complicated?
Absolutely. Think
Yeah.
about it. How much can you alter an image before it becomes like a completely new work? Is a heavily photoshopped image still considered a photograph in the eyes of the law? These are questions that courts are still grappling with.
It really blurs the lines, doesn't it? This case has definitely like sparked some serious curiosity in me.
Okay, so let me throw a hypothetical at you. Let's say I take a photo that's strikingly similar to a copyrighted one, but instead of Kevin Garnett, I use my pet hamster. Same pose, same background. Tiny little chain, maybe a little bucket hat. Would that be considered infringement?
That's a great question. And it gets to the heart of how courts interpret substantial similarity. If the similarities are seen as like generic elements, like just a basic pose or a cloudy background, then you might be in the clear. But if the court is focusing on the overall composition, the lighting, the specific arrangement of those elements, then you could be in trouble.
So it really depends on how much those unique creative choices play a role.
All right, exactly. It's not always black and white. There's a lot of nuance involved, which is why, these copyright cases, they can be so tricky to navigate.
Well, one thing's for sure, I'll never look at a billboard the same way again.
Me neither.
Who knew there could be so much legal drama behind a seemingly simple image?
Well, that's the beauty of these deep dives, I guess. You never know what rabbit holes you're going to fall into. But seriously, this case raises some really important questions about how we value and protect creativity, especially in the digital age. I mean, we live in a world where images are constantly being shared, remixed, and reinterpreted. It's a fascinating and ever-evolving landscape.
It is. And this case could have a ripple effect, you know, shaping the future of photography, copyright. It's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. So to all you photographers out there, think carefully about your creative choices. And to everyone else, the next time you see a photograph, take a moment to really appreciate the artistry behind it. You never know how much thought and intention went into creating that image.
Yeah. And maybe ponder a few copyright conundrums while you're at it.
Exactly. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.